Welcome back to it. We get into the 4 o'clock hour. Hope you enjoyed our sports court today. We've got a big five coming up at the bottom of the hour with more Tony Gwynn from Petco Park. Crisello here along with Mr. Scraby in the Odyssey Palace Studios. Getting ready for a little Chris versus the fans coming up here. And we had a good game yesterday, as Scraby pointed out. Look for another good one coming up today. The winner of which will be qualified for a chance to win our grand prize, the trip to see Bruno Mars in Las Vegas, including two tickets to his show at Dolby Live. It's at Park MGM, September 3rd. You also get a two-night stay at Park MGM and a $100 gift card. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Scraby, give me the title of a single Bruno Mars song.
Gosh.
Can you do it? I don't think I can. Superstar, was there? No, not Superstar.
I definitely know his songs. I don't know titles. Maybe, was there one called Gorilla?
I don't know.
I think there was one called Gorilla. Actually, I thought there was like in our music system over here.
Bruno Mars songs. I'm typing in.
Oh, 24 Karat Magic.
Yeah, is that what it's called? 24
Karat? I don't know. I don't know what the songs are called, but.
I don't know, 24 Karat Magic.
Yeah, wait, you don't know?
I don't.
I'm trying to see real quick. Oh, yes, 24K Magic. You definitely know that one. Hold on, let me put this one in here real quick and see. You've heard this song. Have you?
Yes, but then I quickly changed the
24K
channel.
24K in the air.
Yeah, sorry I asked. Chris versus the fans is coming up. Just came final there up at what do they call that now? Oracle Park.
Uptown Funk.
Uptown Funk. That's not
Uptown
all
Funk
his.
Gonna
though.
Give it to you.
No, that's not all his.
But it's definitely his.
He's in it. I don't think that's
Mark Ronson is the other guy in it.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think that's a Bruno Mars joint.
Treasure is a good one, I guess.
Treasure. Okay, there was one. I know that one. All right, good. Enough. Final.
I already put it in the computer.
Final at Oracle Park. Arizona holds off the Giants, who loaded the bases there in the ninth. Two outs, pop-up, and Arizona wins it 8-7 over the Gigantes today. So you got that. Told you the Twins extended to a 10-game win streak. They took two from the Orioles today. Doubleheader sweep for the Twinkies. And the... one other note, Aaron Judge hit his 15th bomb of the year, enough to get the Yankees past the Mariners. A couple of things happening here. The Knicks and Celtics will be tipping it off shortly in Boston, with the Knicks looking to close out the Jason Tatum-less Celtics. Later on, it'll be Golden State at Minnesota. But the big story of the day, Scraby, it's 4:04, and I haven't mentioned it yet. In an hour, the National Football League will reveal its entire schedule for the upcoming 2025 season. Less.
Remember the days of sitting in class?
That's not what I wanted.
Did you
I wanted
play the
this.
Wrong one?
Yes, my fat finger hit the wrong button.
Uh-oh.
That's
there
what
we
I
go.
Wanted.
Yes, we're coming up on it, baby. Less than an hour, we will know who's playing who. So.
Well, we already do, but...
No, we know who's playing who. We don't know when everybody's playing anybody.
And I'm very annoyed by this whole process. So
yes, but you say that, but when I tell you who the 49ers open the season with, you'll be happy to know the information.
Well, you know what I'll do? Mm-hmm. I will, once all the schedules are out, I will go look for the 49ers schedule.
You just don't need a TV show to tell you.
I don't need 3 hours of...
Yeah, well, NFL Network is going probably the whole thing here, 3 hours. All right, let's get to Chris versus the fans. We got people who want to play and people who want to win. Let's let them at it.
If you had one shot, one opportunity to take down the human almanac himself.
Howdy do.
Now is your time.
Listen to me, this guy is dangerous.
Now is your opportunity to win a prize.
Well, I hope you know what you're in for.
Chris versus the fans starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, the rules. You have to make it through 3 questions. Each question will get more difficult. If you get the question right, you move on. If you get the question wrong and Chris gets it right, you're eliminated. But if Chris gets it wrong, then you move on to the next question or you win.
And you know what? The people who got through on the phones today to be candidates to play, they are not locked out of heaven.
Oh, wow.
According to
this,
that's the number one Bruno Mars
yes,
song.
Yes, I would agree. Okay. I would agree.
All right.
There's lots of Bruno Mars fans out here because everybody's texting me.
Yeah,
names
you should
to
know
the song.
This. You should know this. Yeah, yeah. He's a pretty popular guy.
Before we get into the game, Spencer on the chat, because we were talking about the dog hospice in Sports Court, he said that his wife does this to him. And he said, you better have a good vet and a ranch hand to pick up all that poop, money to feed, flea, and tick. I know a few peeps that have exactly what you're describing.
That's the negative part of all of that.
We were up to 7 dogs. Only 2 are ours. We managed to have placed 4 dogs since.
Yeah, it doesn't sound. It may be too late for who's that? Spencer, you said?
Yes.
Maybe too late for Spencer to get the foot down on that one.
Yeah,
sounds like it's already spun out of control.
It's a little bit.
So I'm a little worried about Spencer there. It sounds like you've kind of got to keep doing it now.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's again. I'm not against doing this.
I know.
I just personally couldn't do it.
It would be tough.
It'd be too sad.
It would be very sad. But I would also think that it would be very rewarding to give that dog a nice life before it passed away.
I agree with that part of it. All right.
Let's move out of this sad dog story that I brought up again.
Our first contestant today will be Peter Hernandez.
Who's that?
That's Bruno Mars's real name.
Really?
There you go.
I had no idea.
I didn't either until
No wonder
just now.
He changed it to Bruno Mars.
Yeah, Peter Hernandez would have never sold a record.
All right, if you're a first-time player, let us know before you get to the first question, and you'll get that question for free. Good. Let's start with Jeremiah. Hello, Jeremiah.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
First-time player.
First-time player!
Awesome.
All right, here we go. Question number 2.
Good luck, Jeremy.
Who did the Raiders draft in the first round of the most recent NFL draft?
Number 2 question here. Think it's gettable. I don't know the draft a little bit.
Yeah, I don't watch the football draft. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Oh, man. I'm sorry.
I only watched it, Jeremiah, because they paid me to watch it.
It's true.
I think they drafted old Ashton Gentry, the running back. And that's probably one of the very few teams I could name the first-round pick. So it's bad luck for you, Jeremiah. Yeah. Sorry about that. But play again.
Sorry, Jeremiah.
Might break your way next time.
Yeah.
You know, we'll give you a question you know better next time. So now that you're in there, make it a regular part of your day. We appreciate it, Jeremiah.
Let's go to Troy in Point Loma, it says. Troy, right. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, Troy. Are you ready to play, Troy?
Yes, sir.
How are all things right. in Point Loma today, Troy? Good? I like Point Loma.
Yeah, nice and sunny.
Beautiful, beautiful place on earth right there. Point Loma.
I do like Point Loma as well. All right. With the Point Loma pleasantries out of the way, let's get into the first question.
Taking care of that.
Coming into today, really in the last few weeks, who is the only qualified hitter in baseball to have a 400 batting average or more?
Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge,
she's
got it.
Is correct.
Very good. He's at 410 before today. We know he had at least one hit today because he had a home run.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
A monster home run.
Aaron Judge is, he's hitting it. He's all that right now.
He is. Second question. What two teams are going to be kicking off the NFL year in September?
You had to be listening yesterday or read up on this.
The Eagles and the Cowboys.
Huh? Nice.
Hey,
Nice job, Troy.
Don't ever question Troy.
Is this Troy Aikman?
Troy Aikman was on that. He knew it. He's broadcasting the game. Very good, Troy. Very
all
good.
Right. Here is question number 3. You get this right or Chris gets it wrong, and you are qualified for... Was it Paul Hernandez tickets?
Peter Hernandez tickets.
Okay, here we go. So this is last year. Which former Padres catcher threw out the first pitch before the Padres and Dodgers played in an NLDS game at Petco Park last year?
No idea.
Okay, he's going to pass. Are you going to pass?
Well, he doesn't know. So he's not even going to take a guess.
We're going to pass.
Chris.
Yes.
Who was the former Padres catcher who threw out the first pitch before the Padres and Dodgers played in an NLDS game at Petco Park last year? It's a wordy question that I wrote.
I can picture the guy who I think it is, but I'm not sure of his name. Carlos Hernandez.
Carlos Hernandez?
He was the catcher on the 98 Padres.
Oh. Yeah, so we talked about him, actually.
Yeah. No, not right.
Troy? You are a winner.
Troy wins. All right. Good for you, Troy.
Stay there, Troy.
All of Point Loma celebrating.
I got to say, I was at this game.
Yeah.
When they announced this guy's name,
right?
The stadium went nuts.
They
because
did?
Jorge Alfaro
threw
out the first pitch one
LFL,
game.
And he got the
stadium ready.
He got him ready. Yeah,
he did. That was really cool, actually.
Good old Jorge. Yeah, that's good. I thought they brought back Carlos Hernandez. But I think they brought him back for a first pitch this year. And he was out there catching somebody as a tribute to the 98 team
because
he was the catcher on that
when
team.
When we did our 20, so. I think we did during 2020, but we did the party like it's 1998. We had him on
he
the
was
show.
One of our guys, yes, because he's the Spanish language broadcaster.
Yes, yes.
Color analyst for Padre Baseball, Carlos.
That's crazy.
Not
crazy.
Him, but
rah, rah, rah.
I just wanted to play Eduardo Ortega.
There's that little Eduardo.
He gave me, for anybody who doesn't know, Eduardo Ortega is a broadcasting legend, and he called a fake
he called
home run
you
of
hitting
mine.
A home run off me.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Rah, rah, rah.
It doesn't get old. It doesn't get old.
Eduardo. Okay, we got to get a break.
Yes.
Got to get a break. When we come back, I got a couple of Padre bullpen stats that you're not going to believe. When Gwen and Chris continues, we got traffic in here somewhere as well. Hi, welcome back. 4:20 is the time, Chris Ello. Tony Gwynn Jr. down at Petco Park. Scraby. It's Gwen and Chris, 97.3 The Fan. Padres, Angels, coming up. About an hour from now, Sam Levitt will have the pregame show. Got a couple of numbers here for you. I'm kind of a stat freak, Scrabe. I don't like to inundate people with numbers, though, because they are just what they are. They're fun to, I think, go over. But it's interesting that we predict so much based on numbers that have happened previously. And it doesn't really, you know, mean a hill of beans sometimes. Guy could be 0-20 against a certain pitcher and still go 4-4. So, got to take him with a grain of salt. But here's a couple that stick out to me. Do you know who the leads the major leagues in batting average? What team? Number one, batting average in baseball.
A's?
How about the San Diego Padres?
Oh, well, that would have been an easy guess, Matt Scraby.
265. But the Padres are nowhere near leading in OPS. They're 10th there at a 734 OPS. The number one OPS team is the Yankees at 828.
That makes sense.
Here's why. The Yankees have hit 76 home runs now. That's 12 more than any team. And it's twice as many as the Padres. Padres have 38 homers. The Yankees have 76. But Padres have a better record than the Yankees. That's not really easy to do when the team is out-homering you to that extent.
Well, if they're out-homering with a bunch of solo shots.
Well, yeah, but the Padres have hit mostly solo shots, too. Remember, we've documented that in the past.
It's true.
All right. Padres bullpen, just how rough has it been? It's been rough, people.
Over the last what?
I'm going to take you over the last week. Okay, we're starting last Wednesday.
You're about to turn.
Oh, yeah, right. Thank you, Cher. We're going back an entire week for this one. The last seven games in which the bullpen has participated in six. Because remember, Kolek pitched a complete game in Coors Field.
Yeah.
So that's not a bullpen day. Six games. In those six games, it's incredible. I mentioned it a while ago on the show, but for those who missed it, the Padres bullpen have given up 31 runs in six games.
That's a lot.
Not a great math guy, but that's more than five per game on average being given up on your bullpen. Last night, the Padres bullpen only gave up two runs. That was the fewest they've given up in any performance the last week. In order, they've given up 10, 3, 7, 3, 6, and last night 2. So it has been really difficult. And it's crazy when you compare it to what they did before. As of last Wednesday morning, a week ago right now, before that game in New York against the Yankees started, which they lost 12-3. Remember, and all those earned runs came in against the bullpen. Yeah. Prior to that game, the Padre bullpen was 9-3 with a 1.68 ERA and one blown save the whole season. In the week since, the Padre bullpen is 1-2 with a 15.28 ERA and three blown saves. You talk about a crazy week that doesn't make a whole lot of sense compared to what, you know, we've kind of come to know with this bullpen. But it's been bad, and thankfully, you know, Fernando saved it last night.
Yes, he did.
Because, you know, you get another loss like that, back-to-back nights where you blow a lead on top of everything else, that can start spiraling on you a little bit. So that's why that Fernando home run was such a big deal last night.
I think we knew the bullpen was not going to keep.
No,
what
we
they
knew
were
1.68 was absurd,
but
we didn't expect 15.28 either.
The greatness is not equaled by how bad they've been the last six games.
They have been really bad. I mean, they've been bad for a week.
Oh, wait, I should say this: for as good as they were, they've been as bad.
Yeah, for at least a week's time. That's fair. And everyone's contributed to it. Estrada blew the save last night. Adam blew one. Suarez blew one. So all three of them have blown one. Morejon and Peralta let the lead get away in that 12-3 loss.
Yes.
That was not officially called a blown save because it happened in the seventh inning, but they did let a lead get away. You kind of get the idea here. All right.
I do get the idea, and I hope it turns around like today.
Tonight would be good. Give me six innings of Randy Vasquez, and then give me, you know, three shutties out of the bullpen. The team bullpen ERA is now 3.32, Scraby, overall, which is now seventh best in baseball.
What are we even cheering for anymore?
I think we should give up the season, frankly.
I'm done.
It's over.
I'm done. DFA them all.
Yeah. The only thing that makes you feel better is I can give you some more of those Colorado Rocky numbers, but you don't want those. It's so fun. To me, I don't know why it is that I'm so drawn to their how bad they are. I am really drawn to it.
How many games have they played? Because I know we were watching like the White Sox pace.
Yes. The Rockies are 7-35. That's 42 games. Last year, the White Sox at this point, I believe, had already won 9 games. So they were 2 ahead. But the Rockies, I think the most amazing thing is that they've played 14 series and they're 0-14.
That's pretty hard to do.
Even the White Sox, I think, won a series in there somewhere.
The White Sox had a small little winning streak in there somewhere.
A little bit, yeah. The Rockies haven't even won a series.
But didn't the White Sox also lose like
18? They lost 21 in a row.
21 in a row.
Yeah, so the Rockies may have to still do that down the road to keep up with the White Sox, which I think the Rockies may be capable of doing.
Now, if we take out the Wandy Peralta numbers, and I'm not trying
only
to single
Wandy,
him out.
Yeah, take only Wandy out.
Do they get a lot better, just a little better?
Haven't figured it without Wandy. I think he gave up 6 in the Yankee game, and he gave up, I think, 2 in the game on Sunday.
Let me see.
So that would lessen the ERA quite a bit.
Wandy Peralta.
In his last two outings, how many earned runs has he given up?
Oh, well, the last two outings, he's only given up 4. He pitched twice against the Rockies, but then against the Yankees. So in the last three outings, he's given up 10.
10. So you could take 10 off of this, and it would be 20 earned runs in 17 and a third innings, which still isn't very good.
No, but it's a lot better.
It's a little better.
I think it's a lot better.
Well, let me see. Instead of 15.28... You know, you got to appreciate a guy that can talk on the radio and
do some math at the same time.
10.18. Not that much better.
No.
It's better, but it's not that much better.
No, you're right.
It's not acceptable. Not acceptable. All right. We'll see if the Padres can get that turn starting tonight. get the bullpen going again. And as I've said often, your bullpen being good makes your manager smart again.
It does.
Because right now, every time Mike Schilt makes a move, you're booing him. But it's not him. It's the guys that are coming in. Earlier this season, we were obviously cheering every time somebody came in for the bullpen.
Because everything works. Worked for him in the beginning.
Right. Well, and you bring the bullpen in there. Like I said, smart bullpens make smart managers, or good bullpens make smart managers.
But you got to stick with him, because, like, I had a conversation with my friend about Suarez the other night and about how he's so angry at Mike Schilt because he didn't take Suarez out of the game or have anybody warming up. And I'm like, Robert Suarez had 14 for 14 save opportunities, barely even giving up hits, striking everyone out. Like, you're not going to just take him out because he walked a couple
guys. You also don't have somebody warming up because you never have somebody warming up.
When your closer comes into the game.
They
think it's over.
To win the game.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take a break. Big Five is next. Stick around. Tony Gwynn Jr. at Petco Park, where we bring him back in for a little of the Big Five, which was put together nicely by Matt Scraby. Let's have it, sir.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, everybody. We're going to have a happy Big Five today because of Fernando Tatis Jr. hitting that walk-off home run last night. That was awesome. And, you know, it was
number five.
Pretty surprising to me that that was his first career walk-off home run. I mean, when you think about it, you don't really think of one, but you would think he had done it by now. He's hit three homers in a game. He's stolen home with the ball in the infield twice. He's pretty much done it all. He hasn't done a cycle or anything like that. So, Chris, I'm going to ask you to put on your prediction hat. What's the next feat you think Fernando will accomplish?
I think he's going to pitch a perfect game.
didn't think about that one.
Yeah, I didn't think of that one either. There isn't a lot left for him. I mean, a cycle is probably something that wouldn't even really be surprising for him to do. But there's been greater players than Fernando even that have never hit a cycle. It's just a weird thing. And the cycle lands on strange players from time to time. You would think he could maybe have a four home run game. But then again, Babe Ruth never had a four home run game, but Scooter Jeanette did have a home run game. So it's really hard to predict something like that. He's won the Platinum Glove. You know, hopefully the next thing he accomplishes that's big is an MVP, and maybe he'll do it this year. You know, nights like last night are going to help him in that pursuit. You know, there's a long season ahead, but if he hits his 40 home runs, he can steal 30, 35 bases, keep his average above 300, and play elite defense, all of things he's already done to this point, there's absolutely no reason he won't be in the conversation for it.
Yeah, yeah. Tony, what do you think is the next feat that Fernando's going to accomplish?
I think it's the MVP. I think that is the one that is seems so obvious that, based off of his skill set and what we've seen him do, I think that's the next big thing he does. At this point, it's hard to not think of it happening as soon as this year, the way he has played here. And this is all while trying to, you know, get timing correct here. He's still up here one at bat, putting his foot down early, the next at bat, leg kicking. That last one that he homered on, It was almost like Kenley's windup was taking too long, so he like hung there for a second and then set it down. And I mean, just the crazy freak nature of which he was able to then generate the type of power he did on that swing was crazy. So I think MVP is the next big one. The next big one that he's got coming his way.
The more I think about it, Tony, I think you deserve a lot of credit for that home run last night. Because I believe that somebody told Kenley Jansen, or Kenley Jansen was listening to your breakdown of Fernando's struggles yesterday, and I think he eased up on that pitch a little bit, thinking, "Nah, he's struggling right now." Yeah. He doesn't look like he's struggling when he hits the ball that far. It is pretty amazing.
You always know, and I'm not on screen but right now, but when a catcher sets up one way and then his glove goes like this to end up catching the ball.
Yeah, he missed his spot.
He missed his spot, and that's exactly what that pitch was. Kenley, I think the catcher was setting up the way, and that ball kind of ran back over the middle, inner third of the plate.
I love how Kenley does the... You know, I don't even know how to do it, but he does the rocking until he throws. I love that.
I think most people just fall down trying to do what Kenley Jansen does.
Also like will mix in the Clayton Kershaw up there on the right side. He mixes that one in there too. It didn't work yesterday though.
It's nice to see the Padres, you know, doing something against Kenley Jansen, because we've seen it the other way so many times.
Very true.
All right.
Number 4. And just to remind everybody out there, other closers do blow saves once in a while. Not just, you know, Suarez. So
word up.
Keep that in mind next time you're ready to trade him.
Suarez is DFA'd, man.
I know. Get him out of here.
I don't want to dance on his grave, but Roky Sasaki has been put on the IL by the Dodgers with a shoulder impingement, making his MLB debut season a little bit rockier. In 8 starts this season, Sasaki owns a 4.72 ERA with nearly as many walks, 22, as strikeouts, 24 in 34 and a third innings. Now, his fastball has been hit pretty hard, even at its peak velocities, and hitters have missed with only 10% of their swings against his fastball, less than half the 21.3% league average whiff rate for fastballs. That was a mouthful. Tony. I know this is going to be an extremely hard question for you to answer, both of you. Do you think he would face the same problem if he was a Padre? I told you. I warned you.
Yes.
You think he would be facing the same?
Without a doubt. Do you know what... Dude, who does this sound like? Who does this exact story sound like?
Yamamoto?
It sounds exactly like Yamamoto.
And look what he's doing now.
And then you fast forward to now and look what he's doing. And listen, I think this was always something that was discussed even before he signed. Before we had an inkling he was going anywhere, was that he was not a finished product. He is a guy who, he doesn't have the experience that Yamamoto has coming from Japan. So, I think this is likely would have happened regardless. Except, you know, in some ways, there probably would have been more pressure because the Padres, you look at the rotation right now, not knowing what we know now, right? He would have been like, well, just one of the fifth starters, one of the five starters, right? And then on top of that, he wouldn't have the workload would be more because the Padres don't have 8-9 guys to start the season. Now he's pitching probably every fifth day, more like, he was before he got hurt. But that was their intention, right? Was they could kind of ease everybody in, and then everybody got hurt, and it all changed. So, yeah, I think it would be the same regardless.
Chris, would he face these issues if he was a Padre?
I don't know that he would face them to the same extent. I think he could have had a much quieter debut as a Padre, and we felt that all along. The Dodgers are the defending world champions. The Dodgers are the darling of the media and the national media, and the focus that goes along with that simply doesn't apply to the same extent in San Diego, and it never has. And we talked about it when he was deciding which team to choose. He said, I don't really want to be in the spotlight. I just want to go somewhere I can pitch and, you know, kind of ease my way. And then he went against what he said, and he chose the Dodgers. So, look, he is example number 10 million of somebody that you hear is great, everybody says is great, but hasn't come out yet and done it. And you know what? He's now going through a very typical growing process to Major League Baseball. Tony's probably right. He's eventually going to be figured out and going to be really tough to hit. But for right now, you know, Padre fans can, I think, feel a certain amount of satisfaction that we didn't get him because you know, he I mean, the arm injury has got to be a concern going forward, and the fact that he hasn't been throwing the fastball the same velocity.
No, he has. It's just still getting hit, right?
Yeah. Well, when
it's
he does get hit, it's
wild.
I think it's a little of both. Yeah, he's been wild. I don't know. So, no. I'm going to say no. Because the Dodgers is just a different stage.
It is. It is a different stage. All right.
No, wait. What was the question? The question was...
Would he face the same problems with the Padres?
Oh, face it. You asked me a different question.
Did I?
I don't know. But he would face the same problems in terms of trying to get guys out. But I don't think he'd face the same scrutiny that has gone along with this happening to the Dodgers.
No, right. Those are two. Do you think he would face the same problem if he was a Padre? Either way,
what are you? How did you figure that out? You typing this down as you wrote it?
No, I'm reading the question that I wrote on the sheet.
You didn't know that he hired a court reporter to sit in here and type out everything he says.
They are. They're doing.
He was going back and like looking at it. Like
they're doing shorthand in the corner right now. I'm always, by the way, amazed by court reporters and how fast they can type because that's pretty amazing. Either way, both of your answers were good, so I am not going to find these.
Number three.
All right, former Padre, but mostly Cardinal, Matt Carpenter has retired after 14 seasons in the big leagues. He has a career WAR of 28.7 and a .259 career average with with 179 home runs in his career. So, Chris, what do you think Matt Carpenter's legacy is?
My legacy and remembrances of Matt Carpenter are probably different from every person in San Diego's. Because I remember watching him at TCU. And he was a cleanup hitter at TCU. And he and Strasburg had a couple of epic duels back in the day. When you knew that both guys were going to be, you know, high draft picks. Strasburg ended up going number one. But Carpenter was, quite a college player. So I remember that about him. But I think his ultimate legacy will be that he is a really, really good major league player and hitter everywhere but in San Diego. And in San Diego, his legacy will be that he was a complete disaster. I don't think that there'll be any different response to anybody around here about what they think about Mike Carpenter. But he had a really nice career. So, I'm comfortable with the career he had. I wish he would have done more here, and I'm sure the Padre fans would agree with that.
Tony's face was pretty hilarious during that.
Yeah, I wasn't looking at it.
San Diego fans don't get a vote in the legacy of him.
They don't?
They might remember him a certain way, but they don't get a vote in the legacy of him.
Okay, all right.
Matt Carpenter was a really good big leader, like really good big leader.
Yeah.
For a long time, too. We just so happened to get him in the last 2 years of his career.
Yeah, last year
as it ends
really.
Up being.
Yeah.
So
no, you're right.
I get that people will here in San Diego will remember him in a Padre uniform different, but in terms of his baseball legacy, he was a damn good big leaguer.
But I'm just saying my way of thinking rating legacy because I don't know, does somebody actually have a book where they write down somebody's legacy?
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
Yeah. If MLB decides to do a
retrospective on his career,
a perspective on him,
okay,
they probably don't even mention the Padre.
Right, they don't even mention he played here.
Or they mention it and they make a mark that he was already in the back end of his career at that point. But, I mean, that's like, is Pujols going to be, not looked at the same way? Because when he went to Anaheim, it wasn't like perfect or L.A. Like, there's... There are spots where guys are older and not the same guy, for sure.
Well, I think you're right.
I can see both ways.
Hank Aaron finished up as a Brewer.
He probably
wasn't a great Brewer. Willie Mays finished up as a Met.
He was
a very poor Met. Babe Ruth finished up as a Boston Brave. It was a forgettable year. So I think maybe Tony's right, that as time goes by, the entire legacy of Matt Carpenter will win out over what happened here in San Diego. But having said that, since we're in San Diego...
He really wants to get in on this.
I do. If you ask somebody in casual conversation at Los Panchos...
Oh, I love Los Panchos.
Me too. If you're having a roll taco with guacamole and somebody brings up Matt Carpenter, prepare to duck. Because here, it's just not remembered fondly.
I remember him fondly.
Okay,
he
good.
Was a great interview in spring training.
He was a very good nice guy. Chris. I like that.
All right.
I like that.
All right, here we go.
Number two.
I'm just going to move past that. All right, Trey Hendrickson is present at Cincinnati Bengals offseason workouts. The key word being present. Hendrickson spoke to the media for nearly 25 minutes yesterday as the Bengals' voluntary OTA session was open to the media. But here is what everyone is talking about.
A little bit transpired between me and Zach. We've tried to keep it as less, as least amount personal as possible. But at some point in this process, it becomes personal. You know, being sent 30 days before mandatory camp or however many days it is, that if I don't show up, I will be fined, alludes to the fact that something won't get done in that time frame.
And so he was saying that he took it a little personally. So my question for you guys, and Tony, you're up first here, is we've heard business isn't personal, it's just business. But in this case, Trey Hendrickson is taking part of the process personal. Should he take it personally?
Should he take it personally? No. But it is almost impossible not to, right? You're having these conversations with your head coach, right? And you guys are doing your best to keep it, you know, not personal. And then all of a sudden you get a letter in the mail signed by your head coach that says, hey, if you don't show up to camp, you're going to be fine. just put yourself in that kind of mind frame right there. It would drive you to do what he's doing right there.
I know. I think I would be right there with him.
I should have guessed you would be right there with him. But, I mean, yes, ideally he could just be like, huh? I know it's just a business, and these are just things that have to happen. But when you play any sport and you're around people as long, you inevitably start to have a personal attachment to people, things, your feelings, to how it all works. And so, yeah, I feel him. I 100% feel him that he's starting to take that a little bit personal. You can see he's really trying not to. He's taking deep breaths in between.
Yeah, he wasn't looking at the camera. He was really thinking about it.
I mean, he did 25 minutes of that. That's a long
time. That's what I'm saying.
He's trying to find the words. Yeah, he's trying to.
Oh, it took him 25 minutes to say the sentence.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. Yeah.
Now I get it.
I get it. I get it. I get why. I think this. I feel bad for him because we know how this is going to turn out. For considering what the team is that is he's dealing with. I know they paid two wide receivers. We were blown out of the water that they signed the second one. We knew Chase was going to go back, but I don't think anybody thought T. Higgins was going to get a deal. Only reason why he did, by the way, is because it ends up being a little bit cheaper than what it could have been on the open market. So, yeah, I feel for him. I agree. I'm on his side on this, but I just don't think it's going to go the way he wants it to go.
It's got to be hard seeing two guys on your team get paid, and you are obvious. I mean, he is a legit NFL defensive lineman, sack leader. Like, he deserves the money, so it's got to be hard for him to see that. Chris, what was my question? Because we're doing
the question. It doesn't really matter what your question is. Here's the answer.
Should he take it personally?
I don't know. Tony hit on that perfectly, honestly. There's no way not to take it personally. But my answer to all of the Trey Hendrickson stuff is bad organization, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bad organization. We saw what happened last year with Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase, to his credit, rose above it and went out and had an incredible season and made it impossible for them not to pay him the money. But they didn't pay him, right? They basically said, too bad. And T. Higgins hated the Bengals all year long. I give Joe Burrow an incredible amount of credit for getting that franchise to a Super Bowl, because their owner is terrible. And we talk about how this stuff trickles downhill. I think that their coach is probably a likable guy, but I'm pretty sure somebody forced him to send Trey Hendrickson a letter threatening to fine him. There's no way that was Zach Taylor. There's no way he wanted to treat his All-Pro Defensive Player of the Year petty like that and say, oh, we're going to fine you if you don't show up. He would never want to do that. But I guarantee you this organization made him do that.
I was going to say, like, I find it weird that the coach is the one delivering that message. Well, isn't that the GM's
job? I think Chris is spot on. I think that came from the organization.
Yeah. This is like, a bad organization.
You're going to have to tell him we're going to fine him if he doesn't show up.
That's not his job, though. It's not his job.
It is in the Bengal organization. It's a bad organization. They finished last year because, you know, well, I guess they got ahead of Cleveland. But you know what? They were not in the hunt all year long, basically, because I think there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, and there will always be that with the Bengals, as far as I can tell.
Yep. When I lived in Cincinnati, the one thing that everybody came together on was hating the owner.
Well, look, Mike Brown owns the team because his dad was Paul Brown. Unfortunately, in this case, the apple not only fell far from the tree, but it rolled away a mile and a half.
If I'm not mistaken, he's like the one handling the money, too, ain't he?
Yeah,
he sure is. I remember watching a Hard Knocks, and he was like in the office, like conducting like actual negotiations.
That's crazy. It's crazy. But anyway, not something I have to worry about, or any of us, because we're not Bengals fans, but I do like to watch the Bengals.
Number one.
All right, Aaron Judge has been incredible this season, although against the Padres, he only got one hit. So he's been so incredible he's been so incredible that one bettor is putting down some money on something that he has a chance at least for now. The bettor wagered $2,000 that Judge is going to hit 400 or higher throughout the entire season for 175-1 odds, meaning a payout of $350,000 is going to come that person's way if Aaron Judge hits over 400. Now, we all know the great Tony Gwynn has come the closest to hitting 400 since Ted Williams, batting 394 before the 94 season was canceled due to a strike. But, Chris, you're up on this one. Will Aaron Judge finish above a 400 batting average for the year?
I like how you, positioned this by saying that the bettor is due $350,000 if he wins.
Yeah.
What we never mention is the casino is almost guaranteed the $2,000 that this guy bet.
In this case, probably.
All right. Rod Carew, Tony Gwynn. Come on. There's great.
I mean, Aaron Judge's name is in those.
No, he's not.
Okay, Tony, both of you gave me the look of like, shut up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Tony will back me up on this. Tony's dad hit like no other person on the planet. Aaron Judge, you know, it's too big of a swing for me to keep it at 400 for much longer. I think a fair bet with Aaron Judge is, do you think he could hit as high even as 333? Or do you even think he could actually win a batting title? Because I don't. I think there's guys that are going to have better averages than him when the season's over. So, to me, this is a stupid bet, like a lot of stupid bets.
Tony, do you think Aaron Judge is going to finish above a 400 batting average for the year?
No, I do not. I think he might have one of those crazy years where he makes a run, you know, through June or July, but I think he'll come back down to earth below 400. I wouldn't put out of his, he's swinging a bat this year, I wouldn't put out of the range of like anywhere between 350, 360.
Huh. Okay.
Like I think his swing is really good, and it's improved a lot since he first came up. That being said, the amount of attention that's going to come, like right now, he's just out there just playing baseball. Let's say he gets to July, August, and he's still hitting 400.
Oh, yeah.
We will be talking about it. He's in New York, of all places.
Yeah, they'll break in for every at-bat he has on MLB.
He will start to feel immense amount of pressure. That being said, too, every year of his career, he has a month where we seem like the Yankee fans seem like they forget that he's Aaron Judge, and they like hate him because he's not. Yeah.
Last year he had it in April. He got off to a terrible start.
So I don't think he gets through four.
Let me ask you this, Tony. Do you think that Aaron Judge, how does he compare in your mind to Barry Bonds? Because I believe they're similar in the fact that they're power hitters who walk a lot, but Barry Bonds never came close to 400. right?
No, I think so, he hit 360, 370.
Yeah. I don't know what Barry's highest was. Because to me, to hit 400, you have to get a lot of walks. And if you go back to Ted Williams got a ton of walks. As a matter of fact, Ted Williams never had 200 hits in a season. Never once.
2002, Barry hit 370.
370. Yeah, yes. All right. So I think that would be a high water mark for Aaron Judge to even
consider. I can
consider.
See. That's what I'm saying. I can see Judge going in that area.
That'd be a high water
because
mark.
Because he has a crazy year. Listen. I don't think there'll ever be a better hitter than Barry. Like, we all got to watch him from, like, start to finish. Like, he's the best hitter ever because he could do all of that. Lefties, righties, didn't matter. He could hit for average, but he also could hit for power. And he could also, like, in his heyday, could steal about 35, 40 bases, too. So, you know, I think that's the best hitter ever.
He stole 52 in 1990. He stole 514 in his entire career.
Really? Over 500?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
It's pretty amazing that guy's not in the Hall of Fame, isn't
it? Well, it might change now.
Let's hope it changes. That guy should be in the Hall of Fame. All right. That's it for the Big Five. Good stuff, guys. When we get back, Chris and I are going to preview the final game between the Angels and the Padres right here on 97.3 The Fan.